From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 26th day of May, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A bit later in the program, Bob Stewart will join us. He's a lawyer from Springfield to help us take a look at estate planning and some of the things farmers might consider as they age, and maybe even as they're very young as well. And as we wrap up our time together in the first half hour, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. If you can stay with us for the second half hour, Commodity Week comes up. Our panelists this week include Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, and Bryce Knorr. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happening in the world of agriculture. You can catch it online right now if you'd like at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. It's the 26th day of May. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Hope you and your family have a great Memorial Day weekend planned.
You too, Todd. You and all the listeners, and especially those listening who have family members that gave up their life as veterans, we appreciate it and hope you have a blessed holiday.
Let's turn your attention to the marketplace. I'm wondering why it is and whether it was wheat that actually led things higher for at least the grain side. They finished 7 cents up for the day. Do you have a good reason why in the soft red that would be the case? Hard red, too, was 6 1/4 higher.
I think a couple things. I think we're starting to get a little bit more lukewarm and not ice cold about demand. We've seen a little bit more price action and bidding going on here against some of our key competitors. That was more late last week, early this week, with some really nice export inspections posted at the beginning of the week. Probably as we got into the later part of this week, the trade started to pick up on what we talked about on Commodity Week about a week ago or so, that the wetter, cooler weather for both the hard red and the soft red wheat is not going to do us any favors at all from a standpoint of not just quality, but also maybe quantity because of the vulnerability this crop it has coming out of winter. Saskatchewan also reported that they're probably going to be about 5% light on planted acres this year because of excessive moisture. This is spring wheat country, so keep in mind, we've had problems with spring wheat all springtime long and getting it planted, and Canada's had even worse problems, it looks like to me. And so I think you've got a general bias, and then the International Grains Council came out, I think it was yesterday, said we see improving demand, maybe a topping in supplies, and maybe we'll be down on global grain supplies for the first time in 5 years. And so between all these factors and some weather in China, some weather in Europe, I think you've got a change in psychology, and I would look forward to seeing maybe a reversal in some of these short positions in the wheat and the corn on today's Commitment of Traders report.
So the coarse grains feeling a bit better. Is that for both old and new crop? And I know they were both up a nickel today, but will that be maintained?
I think it will be in the soft red wheat. I think it's less likely in the hard red wheat. I've been picking up a lot more farmer-related selling in hard red wheat, especially around the Nebraska-Kansas border, as producers who had a very good crop last year are preparing to get their bins cleaned out and ready for the new crop. So I could see where the corn and wheat kind of split out in terms of cash and basis and futures, where the cash corn gets a lot tighter, basis sees a lot better price action if these rains come through. Maybe in the hard red wheat, because of harvest coming up, you see a little bit of the opposite, where the futures has the best upside while farmers sell and weaken the cash market. Soft red maybe follows the corn. That's kind of what I'm looking for as I come back from the holiday.
And in the midst of this, soybeans managed to go down. Why?
The futures market is screaming to farmers right now, after farmers have been and producer clients have been screaming at me on the phone, doesn't Chicago understand how bad it is in the corn? I say, yes, they do. They're screaming through the spread, don't switch to beans. We had, since May 1st, November beans drop about 35 cents. That's a 3.5% drop. Corn has essentially stayed sideways since May 1st. So you are getting the corn crop problems priced in, but you're not doing it in flat price except when the wheat lets you. And I think this is the problem with the funds and how they trade nowadays. But I would say I remember 2009 fairly well. I'm sure you do too. I think if we have this next big rain in the central and eastern Corn Belt, essentially right where you are, all the way to the Indy 500 in Indianapolis and on through to Dayton, Columbus, Ohio, if those rains come through next week, I would say maybe we surpass the vulnerability of a lower crop in corn that we had even in 2009, and maybe we will get some flat price action as a result of that.
Okay, I made note that today the cattle on feed report came out. Usually that comes out just before we go on the air here at 2 o'clock Central Time. And I don't know whether this was part and parcel of Sonny Perdue, the new Secretary of Agriculture, who's very family-oriented, but or not. And I'm going to guess probably it must have been, but they released this early today, and I just happened to catch it. I think it came out at 11-hour time, but I'm not quite certain that was the case.
No, that's exactly right. And we did make new daily lows in both the June fat cattle and the August feeder cattle. The placements were probably the biggest issue to the market. They came in for April at 111%. The top end trade estimate was 112.7. On feed also coming in just under 11 million head, up 102% versus last year. And marketings were very good as well at 103%, which beat the highest trade guess. But markets sold off. I think it was mostly fund reaction. I think the other thing we've got to associate with these spread traders and the funds too, Todd, is if we do see the corn come around and break through that 396 level in December futures and beans don't want to go any lower for now, we have a situation where you might see continued unwinding of the long feeder short corn spread. May have very little to do with the fundamentals, or a lot less to do with fundamentals than just outright fund positioning. But I'm encouraged. I think the fat cattle have a good value to them in the futures market because they're about $5 or $7 underneath the cash price right now.
Crude oil below $50 again, and the Dow above 21,000.
The biggest thing as far as possible good news for soy, and I think time is of the essence technically here now that we've slipped below 940 in the front end and we've gone back to a carrying charge, but crude oil was a very solid performer this week. Yes, we had the sell-off on the OPEC cut continuation, but we're also going to see probably a lot better floor and support in crude oil. We also had gold jump back up to its highest levels since the beginning of the month. We also saw the Chinese currency strengthen, and we also saw that the Brazilian real did not lead the soybean decline. So there are several things here that provide some daylight for soybeans. Weather included. If we stay wet, it's going to get difficult for beans as much as corn as we get into June. So I'm not ready to add to hedges. In fact, I'd probably pull hedges in beans and reduce my hedge exposure in for 2017 if it weren't for such a bad Chinese crushing situation and hog situation right now we're facing.
Would you be as friendly to the corn market? And we only have about a minute.
Yeah, I would be. I mean, I think this is where I am getting more and more of the mindset that if we are worse than 2009, we should not be below the $4 handle. If we are going to have difficulty with the 170 or higher national yield, and we and look at the cattle on feed report we just talked about, if USDA comes out and reduces feed and residual this month, I may have to make a trip to Washington and protest. And I'm not that type of person, but it is getting to the point where the 16-17 demand side is getting kind of glaringly obvious that it's a lot better than the trade expects. So I do think the corn has upside. It's just got to be given to it by the wheat market, I think.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again in a week.
Pleasure to be with you, sir. Have a great weekend.
That's Mike Zuzlow from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the Senate Ag Committee heard testimony this week from several economists on the problems that exist in farm country. Ag Chair Pat Roberts of Kansas and ranking Democrat Debbie Stabenow of Michigan both came to the same conclusion: no more cuts for farm bill programs. at what he described as the Farm Bill hearing in Washington, Roberts did say the nation's debt is approaching $20 trillion. However, he said between the savings from the last Farm Bill and the Ag Department's crop insurance negotiation, everyone on this committee thinks agriculture's already given at the store. Roberts emphasized the importance of producers having risk management tools at their disposal. Let me emphasize, he says, that crop insurance is the most valuable tool in the risk management toolbox. Stabenow focused more on the proposed Trump budget released earlier this week, saying it cuts crop insurance by $29 billion, which would take away a critical part of the farm safety net when it's needed most. A panel of economists and ag business members testified that economic conditions for farmers and ranchers continue to get worse, but it's still not as bad as the farm crisis of the 1980s. Hey, China has issued a wish list for U.S. trade. China's issued a list of concessions that it says can help deliver a win-win trade relationship with America. The list is part of a 117-page document released by the Ministry of Commerce. China would like to improve infrastructure cooperation with the United States and accept greater imports of goods ranging from soybeans to aircraft. The report acknowledges the Trump administration's grievances with China and with globalization, urging balanced development of trade ties in future talks. And finally today, House Republicans are speeding up efforts to pass tax reform, a key for agriculture. But an American Farm Bureau Federation says for procedural reasons, health care reform will come first in the Senate. Here's Pat Wolf.
The health care bill is moving through on last year's budget reconciliation. Taxes are supposed to move on this year's budget reconciliation. If they start on taxes before they finish up health care, that reconciliation for health care evaporates.
Well, that thereby forcing the Senate GOP to have to secure a 60-vote supermajority, including some unwilling Democrats, to pass health care reform. Wolf says the GOP would basically be giving up on health care, but it's giving up on neither health care nor tax reform.
The Senate now has to deal with the health reform legislation, and then they too will turn to taxes. And there's a real desire amongst Republicans in Congress and the White House to announce a single platform for tax reform so that there will be a pre-agreement or an agreement on what tax reform is going to look like so that they don't have to argue about the main principles, only deal with the details.
One big detail is how to help pay for planned tax cuts, and key Republicans have now dismissed earlier talk of a border adjustment or import tax. And AFBF's Wolf recently warned lawmakers in testimony to be careful about changing existing tax breaks like cash accounting and interest deductions in ways that could increase producers' tax bills. And that's a look at the day's agricultural news. Well, earlier in the week, you might recall, I made a trip to the University of Illinois Springfield, and we talked a little bit about estate planning. I'd like to bring that topic back up this afternoon. On that day, we met and spoke with Bob Stewart. He's a partner with the law firm of Brown Hay and Stevens out of Springfield. I asked him, when it comes to farmers, what are the most difficult things that he has to do when trying to help them do estate planning?
I think the largest problem is making sure that we listen to the client when they come through and we develop a relationship with them so that we can jointly arrive at how they want to handle their questions and pass their assets through, whether it's to children or protection of husband and wife, protection of the farm, all of those issues. But listening is the key.
So it seems to me that in your part of the law, that it's not about simply following the law or figuring out how to deal with the law as it pertains to the estate, but in large part about inserting yourself almost personally into the person's or person's business that you're working through in order to understand what it is, what they want to do in a social way and to carry it out in a legal way?
I think in our perspective as a lawyer, I view it as a team. And it's not just the client and the lawyer, it's also getting to know their family, getting to know the accountant, the financial planner, and other individuals that they rely on, because oftentimes just the conversations that I will have with the client don't lead me to a full background of where the client is, the issues that they face. I don't know that they've got two kids or who are going at it or disagree. One might be on the farm, one might be in the city. Totally different approaches, and how do you cover those? And what is the philosophy of the client and the client's family?
What are the hardest issues, and I think you may have explained it, and the easiest issues that you've had to deal with? And I may, rather than saying issues, but family and social types.
Well, you have some individuals in any estate situation after someone passes away. It's not unusual to see, it's almost like a divorce where you have family members coming together and this is their last shot at one another. Sometimes they can be harboring attitudes and feelings that were generated as a young child, and they can be in their 50s and 60s. And all of a sudden it comes out to the fore. And if we can sort those things through in advance and plan for them and make it, our job is to keep harmony within the family and to make sure that the ultimate distribution is in accordance with what the client wants. So those are the issues of how do you deal with siblings, spouses, then you might have some special needs situations. It's a challenge, but it's something that we within our profession truly value the opportunity to help people with.
What should a producer, a farmer have in place today? And you might give me age range at what time that these should be in place?
Well, as with any estate planning, and it doesn't matter whether you're a farmer or not, they ought to have their powers of attorney for property and health care. In other words, if they're in a car accident, husband and wife, or just single individual, who makes those decisions for them if they're out of commission? Then when you get into, if you've got a young family situation, minors involved, you're going to want to designate guardian of the person. Who's going to take physical custody of minor children? Who's going to raise them? Who's going to pay their bills? In other words, the issues, just like on the power of attorney for health care and property, are different, totally different set of questions. You have that when you're raising a minor child. Who takes physical custody, inculcates the morals and ethics, versus paying the bills? And how long do you want to structure that? How do you feel, or how does the client feel about the one child who remains on the farm and devotes their life to farming and also caring for the older generation, where others have gone a different direction than farming and may be in a totally different geographic region? Those are all issues that you have to face and deal with.
Thank you for taking a little time with me today, Bob.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to be here.
Bob Stewart is with Brown, Hay & Stevens. He's a lawyer in Springfield, Illinois. I spoke with him earlier in the week at the University of Illinois Springfield campus about estate planning. This is the Closing Market Report for Friday afternoon. It's the 26th day of May. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Agrable. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us. I'm looking forward to a really good Memorial Day weekend. Will we have rain?
You know, that's a tough question to answer right now, because there's going to be some interesting stuff coming through the state of Illinois over the next 36 hours or so. You know, right now I'm watching this system that's going through parts of northern Illinois, and it's actually trying to kick off some storms a little bit further south, right there kind of where Iowa, Illinois, and Missouri all kind of meet. And so we've got our first round of storms going through the northern half of the state today, and then they're going to spread across Indiana and Ohio, even parts of Kentucky, West Virginia, really bringing a lot of thunderstorm activity to those areas. Nothing right now looks to be really severe. These storms really lack the strong upper-level support, as we call it, to develop. But we got another thing coming tomorrow. So coming off the Great Plains, watching another system for tomorrow night. This will be Saturday night. System moving across parts of Missouri. And this one's got me a little concerned. And the reason why is because the models have been very consistent in trying to turn this thing into a rather large, what we call MCS. To everybody else, we call them squall lines. These squall lines, as they move across the state, could really cause some damage. And right now we're seeing this one try to move across southern Illinois on Saturday night, Saturday evening, Saturday night. And the big thing is that over the weekend, we have this weak little system that's moving toward the Great Lakes, and it might bring even more rain on Sunday and might possibly still kind of clip the Indianapolis 500. I'm not sure just yet. But you know what's interesting about this? We've been so wet, and the rain is not shutting down. But you know who's been getting missed has been the Dakotas. The latest U.S. drought monitor update just actually raised their level. They now have what's called D1 drought in part of the Dakotas, which is causing some problems there. And so I've been on the phone with some of those folks, and they've been basically telling me it's dry, and they're starting to get worried. Now, we look beyond that. Over the next 10 days or so, it's not really drying down too much at all. So we certainly have an active pattern in the short term.
Well, what we'd really like is for it to dry down and for some heat to come in to give us some growing degree days. Is that possible?
Our big problem so far this year has been just persistent troughing over the last month or so. And that's where the jet stream is just in an unfavorable kind of formation for us to get any heat. But I'm starting to see some signals, maybe that by the end of the first week of June, that we could start to see some central U.S. ridging in the jet stream. And if that happens, that can bring in some of that heat that we need. It's kind of funny. We do need heat in June. Turns out corn likes the heat in June. Doesn't like it in July, but likes the heat in June. It really helps it grow quickly. So, you know, I'm keeping a close eye on that end of that first week of June as a good starting time for us to start to build in some of the heat that we need. So I'll keep watching it, let you know about it.
Hey, Eric, thanks so much. And for all the work you guys over at Agrible do for us here at Illinois Public Media.
Yeah, thank you.
And of course, Eric Snodgrass, he's with Agrible. You can catch him, all the rest of our weather updates on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Recall that the CME Group, the markets are closed on Monday. We'll talk with you again live on Tuesday, but we do have a good show for you right here on the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.